بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. نون والقلم وما يسطرون. Allah Ta'ala takes an oath by the pen. إِذَا الْأَبْطَالُ أَقْسَمُوا يَوْمًا بِسُيُوفِهِمْ وَعَدُّوهُ مِمَّا يُكْسَبُ الْمَجْدُ وَالْكَرَمُ. People attach a lot of importance to might and main. They say to might is right. Jiski lati uski bhes. Rather than going into the nitty-gritties of who is right and who is wrong, the general tendency is to see who is more powerful and mighty. When he's mighty, then he's right. Because with the might, then he's got a better position to express himself. He's got more avenues to express his views. And he's got more ways to overwhelm and influence people. As compared to the person who doesn't have the might, he doesn't have the type of clout. So might becomes right. كَفَى بِالْقَلَمِ عِزًّا وَرِفْعَةً مَدَى الدَّهْرُ إِنَّ اللَّهَ أَقْسَمَ بِالْقَلَمِ. So on the one end you've got the sword, you've got the might and main, you've got authority and power to influence, to overwhelm and to win people. And contrary to that you've got the pen. كَفَى بِالْقَلَمِ عِزًّا وَرِفْعَةً. You are boasting over this might and main, we can boast over the pen. We can boast over the glory of the pen. We can boast over the power of the pen. Because Allah Ta'ala has taken an oath on the pen. Allah Ta'ala Himself, with all His majesty and greatness, He has taken an oath over the pen. So, until eternity, we can talk about the greatness, the glory, the might of the pen. Now, when we talk about the pen, then generally there are three pens that people talk about, or three records that people talk about. One is the records that we know as lower mahfuz, that records and preserves the destiny of time, destiny of the world, destiny of the universe, of every individual. Right? That's one record. And then you get a second record that is in the hands of the malaika, that record the deeds of man. Not a single word, a single action, but it is recorded. Everything is checked, everything is recorded, nothing escapes them. How discreet and how hidden the act may have been, it is recorded. The context is recorded, the place, the event, the time, everything is recorded. And then when it is presented on the day of Qiyamah, then it is impossible for you to refute. Because Allah Ta'ala will show it with the entire context. Like a video clip coming before you. This was your intention. This was the place. This was what is in your heart. And look at the event. Now, is there any possibility to refute? Can't refute it. Exactly the place, the time, the event, the catalyst, everything is recorded. مَا يَلْفِزُ مِنْ قَوْلٍ إِلَّا لَدَيْهِ رَقِيبٌ عَتِيدٌ. So this is the second record and the second pen that records. Then there is a third record, a third pen that records. And the third record and the third pen is the pen that is in the hands of man. When there is a controversy, there is a debate, there is something that we are not clear about, then we say, let's refer this. Let's refer this to the archives, to the records of man that we call history. Let's refer this, right? We will debate the facts, but after debating for after some time, then we say, let's go back to our references. Let's go back to our sources, sources of reference. And the source of reference is a record, and the record is in pen. So when you come up with the pen and the records that are penned down, then the dispute ends at that point, because this is what you signed for, what you agreed for. Both the parties, all the parties can't reject this. كَفَى بِالْقَلَمِ عِزًّا وَرِفْعَةً مَدَى الدَّهَرُ إِنَّ اللَّهَ أَقْسَمَ بِالْقَلَمِ. For the rest of time, for eternity, then this is the highest, this is the most glorious. When Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had started off his message, then they tried different ways to challenge, to oppose, right? Different methods. First was with might and main. Like I said, might and main, right? This was the first thing that they had used against Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, right? And then another approach that they used was the approach of the pen, or approach of the media and criticism. Sahirun, Majnoonun, magician, madman, possessed, right? So one is the might. But when you see that the might doesn't have the type of clout, then you leave that, then you move to the next level, and then you use the media. Right? It's a strange, very strange coincidence, right? Although we don't believe in coincidence, because everything is decreed by Allah Ta'ala. But look at it. Up until the 19th and 20th century, the defense that the Batil used against Islam, or they would say Islam spread through the sword, right? Then we came up all in arms to oppose them, to say them, no, Islam did not spread through the sword, right? And the greatest proof that Islam didn't spread through the sword is in the entire duration in the stay in Makkah Mukarrama, was any sword pulled out. And if there was a sword and a dagger that was pulled out, it was pulled out by the Muslims or by the enemy. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had escaped Makkah Mukarrama at the point of the sword, the point of the dagger. 40, 100 people are surrounded, lay a siege against his residence, and he is escaping Makkah Mukarrama in that manner. So, the sword and the dagger, who was holding the dagger? And who was controlling the sword? Was it the Muslim or was it the opposition? So this was up until the 19th and the 20th century. This was the type of media they used. This was the propaganda, this was the media that was used. Then they saw, now we look like stupids. You know, if we say Islam spread through the sword, Islam is still spreading and we have got the major controls of all the countries. Now to say that Islam is spreading through the sword, and we can see our people are accepting Islam, not in dozens, not in droves, in thousands, multitudes accepting Islam. Now we look like real stupids. So they had to re-strategize. When they re-strategized, so they says, no, we should look at something else. So we say, no, no. We have to pass the terrorist bill. So in passing the terrorist bill, they have to do a lot of things. In passing the terrorist bill, they have to do a lot of things. The greatest thing they had to do is to make the Muslim appear as a terrorist. And how you'll make out a terrorist? A person who's got a beard, got a kurta, got a topi. Now this is how you will identify a terrorist. A woman has got an abaya. Anyone that is decent, respectable, then he's a terrorist. And somebody is drugging, clubbing, womanizing, he's a perfect person. So now this is how they're identified. The world has been divided into two. One who's unscrupulous, who's womanizing, who's drugging, who's breaking the law, right? Then he is the person that the world will identify with. But the one that is respectable, dignified, noble, he's got scruples, he's got respect. Then he is immediately branded as a terrorist. See this tool of the media and how powerful it is. It brainwashed the entire world, the whole globe, and everybody's, you know, terrorist is a terrorist. Look at you and look at terrorism. Look at you and look at terrorism. They say, Banya had a mitai shop, selling mitais, you know, selling expensive stuffs, you know, selling almonds and badam, pistas, kaju, so very expensive stuffs, khajur, all very expensive stuffs, figs, you know, dried figs, all very, very, he laid it out, and all expensive stuff. Chana magaj and what you have, what have you, all he's got it laid up. Now it was a Pathan area, so he had to employ a Pathan to do his small work, right? So now Pathan is a big size person, triple his size, a small little banya. So the Pathan, he will take a scoopful, handful of kaju, will fill it up. Nothing doing. Take one pista, whole handful, and he's eating that thing up. Almond, and he's filling it up. Now the banya, obviously, he does his homework, right? He makes big by hisab. What's going? You know, what I sold? And kitna gaya, kitna aya. Kitna gaya, or kitna aya. What went and what came? What went and what came? So, you know, I'm losing out. So, he dismissed the Pathan. By the way, I'm losing out here. More than I'm earning, I'm losing out here. So I said, alright, you dismiss me, it's alright, it's not a problem. So the media campaign, you see. Propaganda campaign, that thing doesn't end. And see the power of the media, the power of propaganda. So he went into the entire town, says, Banya Wahhabi ho gaya. The Banya has become a Wahhabi. Now, all villagers, they don't know what is Wahhabi, etc. But the Banya became a Wahhabi. They don't know what it is, what it stands for, they don't know. So the whole town, they boycotted the shop. Now, where he was making, instead of him seeing a million rand profit, he was doing half a million because of this person's eating everything up. Now he's seeing nothing, nothing doing. So he calls the Pathan, "Bhai, you know, I have to re-employ you. I can't find a suitable person in your place, so I have to re-employ you." So as he's re-employing him, now I said, "But hey, listen now, let's get our act straight. I know you have to eat, right? But you'll have to eat hisab karke, you know. Don't eat so much that you eat into my profits. I'll have to inflate the price a little bit, but eat so much, not so much like what you're eating all the time." But the propaganda war, see, propaganda, media, and how it influences the mind, we don't understand that. Really. The whole world uses it. You know, advertisement, how it's worked out. That Coca-Cola, for example, if you minus the sugar and minus the chill and the gas, what is it? Cough syrup, plain cough syrup it is. It is just the chill, the sugar that is added and the gas that is added that brings Coca-Cola, that makes Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola. I ask you, if the sugar were removed, alright? Or for example, it wasn't chilled, right? Or for example, the gas was removed, will you drink that thing? So there's no taste, there's no kick in that thing. So it is just propaganda. Coca-Cola, and someone is drinking, or a sandwich in his hand, or her hand. More than the person, more than the drink, you're looking at the person. And that's thrilling you. It's overwhelming your mind. But you see, the propaganda, media, propaganda, advertisement, how they influence your mind. They keep talking about it, they keep talking about it, until your mind is indoctrinated. Keep talking about it. As the Shaykh al-Hadith rahmatullahi alayhi, so he knew about this thing, see. He knew about this media and the influence. He was very, very generous. There's a Dastar Khan in his house all the time. Mehman are coming in, going out, coming in, going out. So he's serving them with tea, whatever the time is now, he's serving them some tea, biscuit, or it's meal time, he's feeding them. And then it is his own grandchildren that are doing the Dastar Khan, bringing the food, cleaning up, laying everything, seeing everything is in order. So, some professors from some college, he had come in. And he found the student to be too cute. You know, the way they were doing things, so clean, so neat, tidy, everything is in place. So as they were parting, so one of those, that professor that was there, he made a dua for the children. May Allah Ta'ala make your grandchildren PhDs. He's saying, Hazrat Shaykh, may Allah Ta'ala make your children PhDs. So up till this point he was very pleased, very happy and all that. But the moment he said, may Allah Ta'ala make your children PhDs, his whole tabiat changed around. His whole temperament changed around. Just changed around. And his words, actual words were, kya is lanat ke liye mere hi bachche reh gaye kya? Only my children survived to take this curse. For him it was a curse. But why was it a curse? Now, if you look into the logistics, see why was it a curse. The reason that it is a curse, that you look at an average person that's going up to the university, right? Say, the basics, he did a 5-year course in the university, right? So 13 years till matric, then 5 years in the university, 18 years of exposure, right? Say 20 years of his life, maybe one quarter of his life is gone in that. Then the theme in this type of colleges, university, what is the theme? What is the essence? Unbiased and unprejudiced. For a moment, be unbiased, unprejudiced. But what is the theme of this entire education, the so-called education? What is the theme? The whole theme of this entire education is material security. Anything else? Material comfort and material security. Move God out of the equation, move sawab and akhirat out of the equation, move kindness to people, children, parents, etc. out of the equation. What you have to drum and indoctrinate in the mind of that individual is material security and material comfort. You got that, you got everything in life. You don't have that, you don't have anything. You are a waste, you are a non-entity, you have got no position in society, you're just a liability. And if you've got that, then you are someone, you're recognized. So they work to that extent, to that point, to indoctrinate the mind. That the greatest concern must be material security, material comfort. But in the process thereafter, when they went deeper and deeper and deeper into this material security and comfort, then where it took them to the point that they stripped themselves off from human values. Human values, well, man was totally stripped of human values. And if anybody is unbiased with a clear mind, a very clear mind, if he has to listen and see what's going along, then you will have to come to this conclusion. Definitely you have to come to this conclusion. I think what a day passes when I don't get these type of complaints, right? Yesterday or the day before, complaint coming in from Cape Town, right? Girl, I know the families, etc. So she's complaining. Husband become a top doctor, specialized and all that, and he's there somewhere. So now, she's complaining, and the essence of her complaint. First complaint, she says that, you know, my husband, he goes to a gym. That's how he starts off his day. Goes to a gym. And the gym is a male, female, all mixed up. The instructors, as well as the clientele that comes, they all male, female, everything is mixed up. The music blasting. My husband is going there, right? Obviously, the woman that will come there will come with abayas and so much of parda, conscious they will be, right? They come in that. And the music also will be like Quran Sharif, Tilawat and all that. Obviously, that's the environment, that's going to be the ethos of the place. Right. Now, I addressed with my husband. She's also quite a learned person. She addressed it. Right. Now, see, again, material security. So, she complains to him. So, he in reply says, all right, they are all male gyms, but then you must foot in the bill. See, it's costing me, say, 2,000 here. And that thing is 4,000, the additional you must charge, you must pay me. Whose fitness and whose deen is security? But you see that mind, that warped mind, 18, 20 years just in that environment, material security, material comfort. So you must pay the rest towards this bull of mine. Then the second complaint, see, she's complaining, she's crying, she's complaining. Now, I don't entertain this type of calls, a young woman is phoning, but now she got nobody to call to. I explained to her that the right thing was to speak to your parents. I don't want to break this marriage. I know if I'm going to phone up home, then this thing is going to end up in a disaster. What must I do? Then the second complaint she gives, she says, all right, and then once or twice in the week, he won't go to the gym, and he's taking a walk, right? Here we have the beach front or something, and there are some front there also, some water front, whatever. So she's giving all the story, and he goes for a walk there, right? Now, in that, there's women, there's men, all ages, all type of clothing, and this chacha here, and he's taking a walk in that for 1-2 hours. I'm discouraging him, and he gets pulled up. He gets pulled up. I'm asking him, I got nothing to do. The whole day I've got nothing. The morning till the evening, nothing to do. Because you got every type of an appliance, every type of system you've got. So everything is wrapped up in 2-3 hours. Then what do I do for the entire day? No response. He's leaving the home at about 7-8 o'clock. He's coming back at about 8 o'clock. So 12-13 hours he's out of the house. When he's coming back into the house, then he's too tired. He can't talk to me. I try and make conversation with him to cheer him up. No, he pulls up his face. He's red in the face. And he's tired. He just wants to eat and drink and sleep. Nothing else. But you see how the mind is warped. So when we send our children to this, and we don't balance it with the right ethics, values, etc., then he becomes just a money-making machine. There's no warmth. There's no love. There's no emotions. There's no respect for any feelings. It's money. Sometimes you blame the girl also for going to the family, because one of the things that drew the woman to that family was the wealth. Alright, he is earning like this. He's such a wealthy, such a secure person. So my daughter will be secure in this type of a home. So you have earned what you have paid for. You have paid for this is what you've earned. So Hazrat Muhammad Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, when he says to this person, you know, that ye laanat ke liye bas mere hi bacche reh gaye, that you didn't find anybody else to curse but my children. He took it so personally. In the meanwhile, we don't say that you don't do anything for this material journey of yours. You do something, but you need to balance it out. You're doing so much, then how did you balance your deen? You can see now they're going into this type of environment, school, high school, college, university, that type of people, that type of environment, etc. Then what things they will be exposed to? Then how did you balance it out? You're sending your child to Malawi, and you know it's a malaria season, right? Then what precautionary measures will you take? Every precautionary measure, injection, inoculation, before, coming, after, the place that he's going to be living in, every type of precautionary measure you're going to take before you have to go there or your children are sent there. So these type of infections are all around these places. Infection is there. The instructors are kuffar. They're atheists. Many of them are Satanists. All types. And we have got the guts to send them there without immunizing them, without giving them any type of immunity, any type of defense. And then we expect them to come out farishtas from that place. So anyway, we're talking about the power of the pen. So when the kuffar realized that we can't attack Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam through our might and main, right? Because they are also becoming powerful now. They're becoming strong and they're becoming powerful. Because Umar has entered Islam. And Hamza radiallahu anhu has entered Islam. Mighty persons, a lot of influence. Now they have to change the strategy, re-strategize. So another strategy they used was the pen, media, propaganda. And they made this type of an allegation against the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam because they couldn't doubt And they couldn't doubt his integrity. Nobility of lineage, they couldn't. Honesty as a person, they couldn't doubt that. Because they would have seemed to be a stupid person, embarrassed, because of their own false allegations. So they don't want to seem like the stupid person there. But they had to somehow stop him, curtail this whole thing. So they say, no, he's a madman. And why do they say he's a madman? Because he's going totally against the flow. The whole world is speaking about polytheism, multiple gods, right? And this is one solitary man, and he's speaking about the oneness of Allah Ta'ala, whereas the whole world is going against us. It's going in a different direction. He's going against the entire world. So, when a person is going against the entire world, once out, imagine one person taking on a million people, what chance do you stand? You say, no, he's a madman. How can he go and challenge and confront 1 million people, one person, one solitary person, and he's confronting 1 million people? He'll die, definitely. So, you say, no, this man is mad. That was the one reason, perhaps, the second reason why they called him, and they labeled him as a madman. He was speaking things that was beyond their reasoning. He was talking to them about a life after death. So they challenged, مَتَا هَذَا الْوَعْدُ إِن كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ. You talk about a life after death, then we want to know, when is this coming to pass? If you are telling the truth, then this must come to pass. Why is it not coming to pass? لَقَدْ وُعِدْنَا نَحْنُ وَآبَاؤُنَا هَذَا مِنْ قَبْلِ إِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا أَسَاطِيرُ الْأَوَّلِينَ. This pattern had been always amongst our fathers and our grandfathers and our generations above. All were hearing the same stories. There is something after death, something after death. This is nothing more than tales of the ancients. So you see, when Nabi Sallam is talking about Qiyamat, life after death, he's talking about the oneness of Allah Ta'ala. And because their reasoning can't, it doesn't appeal with their reasoning. Or because even it may be appealing to the reason, but it's going against the norm. When it's going against the norm, then the only thing they can say is a madman. Because it's going totally against the multitude. So now Allah Ta'ala answers this in support of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. He says, مَا أَنْتَ بِنِعْمَةِ رَبِّكَ بِمَجْنُونَ. If they labeling you as mad, we saying you that you are perfectly normal. We are saying that you are perfectly normal. Hazrat Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, he had one murid, and the murid was stationed somewhere near Lucknow somewhere, right? He became a leading person. All these professional people used to come and take bayat at his hands. So one person came up to him and he says, that I want to take bayat. Doctor or whatever it was, and he says, I'm going to come take bayat at your hands. So he says to him, see, I will take bayat, but I am of a different khyal, I'm a different thought altogether. I heard abuse against your elders. I heard abuse against them. I don't consider them to be Muslims. But if you want to accept me for bayat, well and good. So, alright, what's the problem? He accepted him. Saw the man, saw his temperament, saw this potential in the person, because there is some level of sound thinking in him. He's not a biased person. He won't be stuck with an illogical concept, right? He won't be stuck with that. If I explain this thing to him clearly and properly, perhaps he'll accept. So I saw that there was some reasoning in him. He was a person of sound reasoning, understanding, without any prejudice. So let me accept him. One day his mind will just open out. Not even a week had passed, the same person comes and is crying before his sheikh. He said, make me maaf. Make me maaf. My whole life I ended in hurling abuse against your elders, against your ulama, against your mashayikh. I hurled abuse. But last night I saw Nabi Sallam in my dream, right? And I saw Al-Mawla Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah sitting, like how he would sit in tashahud. You know? He was sitting in front of Nabi Sallam. And he's complaining to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Ya Nabi Allah, Mera kya kusur hai? What's my fault? Why are these people making these allegations against me? Why are they criticizing me? Why are they condemning me? What's my fault? Akhir mujhe bataye, Mera kusur kya hai? Tell me what's my mistake. I understand it's my mistake, I can correct myself. But tell me what's my mistake. So Nabi Sam took out his hands and he embraced Hazrat Mawlana Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh and he says, "Lekin main aapko kusurwar nahi kehta hun. They may be condemning you, but I don't condemn you, I don't criticize you. Phir agar sarkar kisi ko kusurwar nahi kehte, to phir kya dar? If Nabi Sam himself, the head of all mankind, if he holds him free of blemish, free of all these allegations, then what is there? Is there anything to fear?" So Allah Ta'ala stands out as a witness and says, "Ma anta bi ni'mati rabbika bi majnoon." By the grace of your Rabb, you aren't insane. Forget their criticism. Let them say what they want to say. "Wa innaka la'ala khuluqin azim." And you are standing upon an exalted standard of character. Your character is what? Ordinary. When you see a man, when you judge a man, and you want to know about how great he is, then you judge him with his credentials, right? His performance, his credentials, his values, his character, his mannerisms, his ways. This is what you talk about. You got a proposal for your daughter, what do you do? You see now, right, what are the credentials of the person? How solid is he? Is he a secure person? Is he got values? Is he got respect? Will he have time? Or is it just a temporary thing that he's overcome with? You can look at all these things here before you confirm anything. So Allah Ta'ala himself says, وَإِنَّكَ لَعَلَىٰ خُلُقٍ عَظِيمٍ. To have this type of a noble and sublime character is not everybody's work. The kuffar in Makkah Mukarramah, they're in agreement. They also can't refute this. Because nowhere in the Quran could they refute the sublime character of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. They may have said other things, mad, etc. But could they criticize and condemn his character? They couldn't criticize this. إِنَّكَ لَعَلَىٰ خُلُقٍ عَظِيمٍ. Anas Sadiran says that I had served Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam for 10 years. And in all that duration, from the age of 10 till about 20, I was in the khidmat, prime years of my life, growing up, coming up to maturity, adolescence, and then the next 5 years, 8 years after those, I was with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam all the time. But never did he tell me, why didn't you do this and why do you do this? You know, you'll shout a person, you'll reprimand him, why did you do this or why didn't you do this? I asked you to do this or asked you not to do this, why did you do this and why didn't you do this? In all that duration, he never. Now, that type of character can only be possible in a person that is very composed, very, very calm, composed, perfect and most excellent composure. Only that person can do it. Otherwise, you must have a fluctuation in your mood, in your business. You ask him to do this, why you did it wrong? What's wrong with you? Why did you do it like this? You've got no brains. So you will reprimand the person perhaps every week at least. You will tell why this and why not. Yeah, the man is 10 years. And all that 10 years, Nabi Sam never told him why this and why not. That's the one reason he was very composed. And the second is this, that the degree of reliance in the decree of Allah Ta'ala, the degree of reliance in the destiny of Allah Ta'ala, what Allah Ta'ala wanted, it would happen. So you can't alter that. So Allah Ta'ala decided. So what's the need to ask him, why did you do this and why didn't you do this? I asked him to do it, he didn't do it, or he did it. He did what I didn't ask him to do. So the reliance on the destiny, divine destiny, was of such a level that not a day did Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam ask him, why did you do this, or why didn't you do this? Again, Anas Sadiyan says, imagine Nabi Sallam's position. Hundreds and thousands of people under him, right? And he's starting off from the ground, from scratch, no following, one single person, isolatory person, right? But in all that, you can't prove at any time, we started off from this point, right till the end of his life, did he ever strike any person, hit any person? Nor a woman, nor a man, nor a child, nor a slave, nor a slave woman. You can't show that he ever struck anybody. And when I say struck, he never struck anybody. forget the physical abuse, not even verbal abuse. You know, you may strike someone, sometimes you strike him physically. And I think maybe some of us may have not done that. Maybe it's a very remote chance that we have not hurt anybody from the time that we know ourselves till this day. Can we say that we didn't hurt anybody physically? But Anas says that all that duration, he never strike anybody, he never hit anybody. From that age, right till the end, never. He didn't see it. No verbal abuse, no physical abuse. Now, who can do this? He must be a person divine, divinely appointed, guided. Every step of the road, he's been appointed and he's divinely guided. To the extent, when I say no verbal abuse also, a delegation of Jews come to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, right? By nature, these people are derogatory people, people with no values, very, very low esteem. So as they come into the presence of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, they greet him with the words, Assalamu Alaikum. Salam in place of salam, right? But when a person is not listening attentively, he may misconstrue it for salam. Salam alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. So you know what I'm saying? As Aisha radiallahu anha was there, she was seated, very intelligent. As Aisha was very intelligent. Smart, intelligent, she had everything. Everything she had. You know, if I say there's a second was Khadija radiallahu anha, it was Aisha radiallahu anha. So identical, so perfect, you know, and such a partner, you know, it's something from heaven. Nabi Sam has seen as Aisha radiallahu anha, even before the marriage, as a Jibreel Sam brought a photo. You can't say now, photo is permissible because Jibreel brought the photo to Nabi Sam. Illogical, isn't it? Things of the next realm, you cannot justify things of the next realm to this world here. In the next realm, there's no namaz there. So can you say because there's no namaz in Jannat, therefore we don't perform namaz here? There's no such a thing like zakat there, so you mustn't pay zakat there. There's no such a thing that you must restrict yourself only to four wives. There, any amount you want. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Right? So the law that side is something else, and the law here is something else. So, they came and extended this greeting. Assalamu alaikum. As Aisha said, she was a perfect woman. Very few women were as perfect. You know. Some few women had reached a level of perfection. As Khadija, as Asiya, as Maryam, as Aisha. Some few women had reached that level of perfection. It was Aisha, when she heard this, she got tipped off, obviously. And Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, my husband, and Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Allah Pak's appointed man, and you don't have been the decency to address him correctly. So she says, Alaykum Assalam, wa Alaykum Al-La'na, wa Ghadabullah, the curse be returned unto you. The destruction, Assalam is destruction, death, right? Death for you, destruction for you, the curse of Allah Ta'ala be to you. Now imagine Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the calmness, the control, the composure. So Nabi Sallam says to Aisha, Alayki bir rifq. Just hold on. But Ya Rasulullah, didn't you hear what they said? She was emotional, obviously. Now, Nabi Sallam is so perfect to control a circumstance, a situation, you know. It takes a person that is complete, comprehensive. And he has to respect Aisha's feelings, right? But he has to also control the situation. He can't disregard the emotions, because the emotions are for the right reasons. Can you say that Aisha's emotions are for the wrong reasons? The emotions are for the right reasons. So he has to consider this, but bring about a composure and a control to the entire situation. So she says to Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but didn't you hear what they said? He said, yeah, I heard that what they said. But see the reply I gave. I said, Wa alaik. The greeting that you have extended, be returned. Now you said, Alaykum Assalam, wa la'na, wa ghadabullah, right? The curse of Allah Ta'ala, the anger of Allah Ta'ala, destruction, death to you. That was one. And I said very nobly, very comfortably, the return of the greeting that was extended. Same thing. But it wasn't that a noble style? Wasn't that a respectable style? Is there any one word, one ingredient of something that was malicious, something that was aggressive, something that was impolite? Nabi is a sublime character. We talk about it, we hear about it. But Allah Pak, give us some of that qualities. We must talk about it and bring it. Talk about it and bring it. When I was reading that article, Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi, I think one day before he passed away, and he's one of his passing advisors to Hazrat Shaykh al-Hadith Muhammad Zakaria, that is his nephew, says, try your best to bring all the sunnah of Nabi Sahib in your life. Every sunnah, at least practice on it. If you can't practice it throughout your life, at least one day practice on it. Every sunnah, bring into your life. The description of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is also contained in the previous scriptures, let alone our scriptures. Even in the previous scriptures, Torah, Injil, have got the description of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Muhammad, they say, Muhammad, born in Makkah Mukarramah, right? His kingdom is extending over Syria. Syria at that zamana was right till Medina Munawara. If you look at the old atlas and old maps, you'll find it comes right till Medina Munawara. A great part of Saudi Arabia is Sham, is Syria. Right? And then, he says, Makkah is the birthplace. Medina Munawara is the migration. Right? And then, he doesn't return an evil with evil. Aggression with aggression. Impolite behavior with impolite behavior. Ya'fu wa yasfahu, he forgives and overlooks. Rather, the aggression, he replies to the aggression with politeness and with respect. And then, لم يكن فاحشا ولا متفاحشا. He wasn't aggressive, he wasn't impolite. And nor would he go to a place where there is some type of aggressive activity. People are aggressive, impolite. He won't even go into that type of gathering. Person that is sitting around his gathering, he feels so secure that my integrity will not be attacked. I will not suffer any type of attack on my integrity, on my reputation, on my respect. I won't be embarrassed. I won't be humiliated. He feels so confident of the person that he won't humiliate me. He won't disgrace me. He won't insult me. Whether in private or in public, he'll never do this. See, that is the description of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam contained in the previous scriptures. One is his own character, then what he has to say about good character. You see, we consider that good character is a small thing. And sometimes we don't know what good character is. But just to give you a small rundown of what is good character, to behave in a way that Allah Pak approves and people approve. It is not only approved by Allah Ta'ala, but it's approved by people as well. People approve of that character, and Allah Ta'ala also approves of that character. Now that is called sublime character, that is called mannerism, that is called value. Otherwise it's easy to sabke saath has has karke bolna, to laugh and smile at you, and use polite words, but my heart is filled with poison. Would Allah Ta'ala will be happy with it? I smile at you, I am pleased with you, on the surface, but within my heart I am cursing you. Is that called good character? Is that called mannerisms? Is that called good behavior and standards? So to behave in a way that both Allah Ta'ala is pleased and people are pleased, that is called sublime, that is called character, that is called mannerisms, that is called values. وَلَكِنْ يَعْفُ وَيَصْفَحُ. So the man that has got good character, good ways, the more time says, the easy way how you develop your character is don't be in a haste. When you have to say something, or you have to behave in a manner, don't be in a haste, don't hurry in doing anything. Don't hurry in saying anything. Wait, think about it, be very careful, don't make hasty decisions, don't say anything in haste. Think about it, short term, long term, what will be the consequence, then say anything, or then do anything. Now the man that has got this type of character, then he will overtake that person who stands up the entire night in tahajjud, the whole day in Roza. Imagine Roza the whole day and one of these hot days, right? So the whole day you will overtake the person in Roza and you will overtake the person that is performing Tahajjud Namaz. But good characters, good mannerisms. That good mannerism sometimes we think is only for the people that are outside, that you're working with outside in the business, etc. By that greatest character is supposed to be shown in your home. The greatest character must be shown in your home. Outside you have to show it. But the greater place, the greatest recipient of your good character is your own home. You're showing people good character. But what about your wife? What about your children? They don't deserve it. You know, Nabi Sallam's character was so sublime, so comprehensive. His teaching also is comprehensive. If he speaks about the rights of men, right? And he says to that man, if he says to that woman, right? He says to the woman, what he says to the woman? That if I had to command any person to make sajda to any person, then I would have commanded the wife to make sajda for the husband. See the respect. So he's showing the respect, the position of the man. But then, Nabi Sallam is not selective. He's not single dimensional. He's complete. He's comprehensive. He shows the other side as well. If he shows the rights of the husband, then he shows the rights of the wife as well. He says, and the best of you is the one that is best towards his household. See, comprehensive. There's one dimension, only my rights. And unfortunately, the world has turned around such that everybody has learned his portion of the Quran. You know, the Tarawih time, you got five officers reading quarter sibara, so they only learn their portions. Right? They don't learn the whole one quarter sibara, only their portion, one quarter of mine I must learn. So unfortunately, we have learned only our side of the Quran. So the poor will come to the wealthy and he says, you know, the Quran Sharif says, Atu zakah, must give zakat. Mustn't be miserly. You must prefer others over yourself. So all the things that relate to him, he's preserved. So gharib aadmi ne apne hisse ka Quran seekh liya. His portion he learned. And the wealthy person, he learned his portion of the Quran. وَلَا يَسْأَلُونَ النَّاسَ إِلْحَافَ. You know, Muslims, they don't go around begging people. You know? They don't go around begging. Kisi ko chimat chimat karke sawal nahi karte. They don't get persisting and asking people. So the wealthy has learned his portion of the Quran and the poor his portion. You get these phones coming in, you know. My husband keeps reminding me, you know, I'm sick, I'm not feeling well at all. He wants me to share the bed. And in his support he will say, you know, but the malaika will curse you for the entire night. He is one track mind. Whatever is for him, whatever is his rights, well, you already talk about that. But the hadith which speaks about be gentle towards them, istawsu bin nisa'i khairan, that is forgotten. That's out of his memory. Where he's loaded up with 100 type of works, you must do this and do this and do this, right? I'm getting so much mehman. So she's loaded with all the work. Then, that's the day shift. Night shift also she must work for him. She doesn't realize that he's loaded this entire burden onto her. She's tired now. Now night shift also he must work. But you see how unreasonable we become. So everybody has learned his section of the Quran Sharif. So it's a plea with the Quran Sharif. It's not that what Allah Pak wants from me is my rights. You mustn't encroach onto my rights. So that's a plea with the Quran Sharif. So that is why that good character, right? The martaba, the maqam, the position of the person that's got that good martaba, the good akhlaq, overtakes that person who is tahajjud guzar, overtakes that person that is fasting throughout. Sublime character, good ways, good mannerisms. The deed that will be the weightiest in the scales of deed tomorrow on the day of Qiyamah is good character. Hazrat Muaz ibn Jabal radiallahu, he says, Nabi Sallam is dispatching me to Yemen. And he's already telling me, oh Muaz, when you're going to come back this side, then perhaps you won't see me, you'll pass by my grave. Now it's a parting time, you know, Muaz is emotionally crying, he can see it. But what was the separating advice? As his leg was on the stirrup, and he's just about mounted, what was the parting advice? Can you imagine the scene as Muaz is up in tears? Nabi Sallam is telling him, right, you will come past here, you will come past my grave. You will not see me again. Right? But what was his parting advice? Well, all parting advice, we send your person to the business. Hachwila Rajwa, see that business. Hey, I don't want you here. That business must collapse. That's going to be our advice. You know, hey, you know, this is a lifeline. You know, wealth, you need money. Eh? You don't live for fresh air. So you look after the shop. You know, your grandfather took care of the shop here. And that's how you became so wealthy and mighty. You're not going to crash this whole thing. So this is how we're going to talk. He's not been sent to just look after one shop. A whole country must look after. And the parting advice, أحسن خلقك بالناس. Maintain good values, good mannerisms, good ways. At that time, I'm thinking of it, Yemen was perhaps predominant Christian, mostly Christian. People just accepted Islam now, recently. Many were still Jews or Christians. So that character had to be displayed even amongst non-Muslims. Not only should the Muslim be the recipient of your good character, even the non-Muslim should be the recipient. They also deserve to see your good character. Okay. See good akhlaq, good ways, good mannerisms. Al-Mu'ad Thanvi Sahib Rahman used to say this. He says, in my sight, you know, I prefer that person who's got good character, good ways. But like I said, that good character means that type of character, mannerisms, ways, and values that is approved and liked by Allah Ta'ala and liked by people as well. Not just liked by Allah Ta'ala and not liked by people, or liked by people and rejected by Allah Ta'ala. He says, I would prefer that person who's got good character, good ways, than that person that is only making ibadat. Because that person that is good in his akhlaq, etc., he won't hurt anybody. If he's got someone's daughter in his marriage, he's not going to hurt. He's got his child, he's not going to hurt. His parents, he's not going to hurt. His brother, he's not going to hurt. He's not going to assault, he's not going to insult, he's not going to be aggressive, he's not going to cause any injury. But that person that is only doing ibadat, you don't have the level of security by, you don't know how his temper is just going to rise. He may just tell his wife, you know, meto, deen ki fikr ki wajah se meto jalta ho rato din. Aur tu to chule ke samne rato din jalti hai. Because of the fikr of Allah Ta'ala, the fikr of deen, I'm burning morning and evening. And you are burning morning and evening just with a stove. So he'll insult her, he'll disgrace her, he'll humiliate her. So that person whose character is good, his ways are good, his mannerisms are good, he won't hurt. Kisi ko takleef nahi pahunchayega. You hear of your son-in-law, or of any person, good character, he reads namaz, etc. Not too much ibadat. Now I don't say that, by leave out your zikr, tilawat, etc. Because, you know, every now and then you have to reiterate, you have to correct yourself. Because there's so many people that pull the wrong, the misconstrue. They're doing all that, but not too much. And a person who's balanced with a good level of character, definitely you will prefer that person. In your business, you won't rob. You won't cheat. He won't be fraudulent. He won't make wrong promises. I'll pay you tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. He won't do these things. Good character. I want to make a lot of ibadat, but he's fraudulent. Not paying the person on time. He's squeezing this person here, paying that person, delaying that person. How do you feel? Going for umrah, making ibadat, a lot of things, a lot of tasbihat is doing, a lot of jamaat is going, a lot of buzruf is sitting by. But then he's fraudulent, he's robbing, he's cheating, he's not true in his word. Allah Pak Tawfiq.